is presented as entertainment, not flight instruction. Though some participants are certified flight instructors, their comments, opinions, and discussions of flying techniques are theirs alone. None of the co-hosts or guests on this podcast are acting as your flight instructor. Please consult your own CFI for guidance on your specific flight training, aeronautical knowledge, and aircraft operation. This is the Stuck Mike Avcast, an aviation podcast about learning to fly, living to fly, and loving to fly.
Episode 220, Around the World in a Gyrocopter, coming up next in this episode of the Stuck Mike Avcast.
Now here are your co-hosts, Victoria Newville, Eric Crump, Larry Overstreet, Russ Roseleski, Tom Frick, Rick Felty, and Carl Valeri.
Welcome to the show about learning to fly, living to fly, and loving to fly. Today we have a special gyrocopter episode and an interview with two people who love to fly gyrocopters. So much so, one of them is actually flying around the world. Victoria sat down with Frank Noe and James Ketchell in an interview, and we're going to get to that in a second. But Victoria is here with me today, and also Tom Frick. Hey guys, welcome to the podcast here, getting ready for that big storm coming.
Hey.
Carl. How's it going?
Good. And I'm all excited about the show tonight because this is something I don't know much about is the gyrocopter flying. So, but before we get started talking about that and listening to the interview, a couple of little words from our sponsor. So let's go listen to that.
Do you want to pursue a career in aviation as a pilot, air traffic controller, mechanic, or dispatcher? Or do you just want to earn that commercial or instrument rating, but you need help paying for it? The Aerospace Scholarships Guide at aviationcareerspodcast.com has over $50 million in available scholarships. Many of these go unused because people don't apply for them. For just $10, you'll receive a full year subscription to the guide, which is updated monthly. Every scholarship is personally verified to make sure it's accurate and still available. More information is at aviationcareerspodcast.com.
And with this scholarships guide, by the way, there's 25 new scholarships and 25 updates to that scholarships guide in August. A lot of people ask me about the scholarships guide, why I mentioned it so much in Stuck Mike Avcast. This is a general aviation podcast. Well, the reason being is there are so many scholarships out there. One of the comments I heard from someone is that, you know, the scholarships are really geared more towards folks that are in high school, and that's normally, and in college, excuse me, and that is normally true, but there's a lot of other scholarships out there for people of all ages. And you know what? We know someone that actually got one that's actually out of college, and that's Victoria. Right, Victoria?
Yeah, if I can do it, you can do it.
Yes, please keep that going around. If she can do it, or anybody else who's out of college right now can do it, you can do it too. So just because you're older than the college age doesn't mean you can't get a scholarship. As a matter of fact, there's bunches of them out there, and we're adding more every day. We're adding some from Australia and also Canada, and Alicia, who's our new scholarships coordinator, is doing a wonderful job on that. So go check that out, aviationcareerspodcast.com/scholarships. Anyway, let's get on with some news and announcements. Let's see, first of all, Girls in Aviation Day is on October 5th. It's coming up. I know that my local Women in Aviation chapter that I'm involved with here, the Lakeland chapter, we're going to have a really cool Girls in Aviation Day with all sorts of events. And just to introduce younger women and people in general to aviation, and they're going to have flights, they're going to have schools set up to discuss aviation as both careers and also as a hobby, which I think is really important for young ladies to understand that there's many ways to get involved in aviation, not just as a career. I know, Victoria, I think you had mentioned you folks will also be having a Girls in Aviation Day.
Yep. Each year our 99s and Women in Aviation chapters get together to do a joint event to introduce aviation to young girls.
So if anybody's interested in this, the Women in Aviation website's the best way to go to find one in your local area. So it's WAI.org. Women in Aviation International, that's it's a great organization, and they have many events for people of all ages. This is Girls in Aviation. It's focused more on the younger folks, and they have many different events for them, and they have, you know, flying. They have all sorts of really cool stuff. I love doing these. These are just so terrific. And I know Kelly Fly Girl is going to be where? I forget where she's going to be. She might be in Lakeland. I'm not sure yet. But she's a big promoter of that. We've had her on before. One other event that's coming up in September, which I think is really cool, and I've always wanted to go to. I have lots of friends that go there. It's the International Seaplane Flying. It's up in Maine on Moosehead Lake, and that's September 5th through the 8th. And yours truly, it's Victoria, will be there. And if you see her, make sure you tackle her and say, hi, Victoria. No, no, don't tackle her. Just say
maybe
hello.
Don't tackle, but a hello is great. I don't need any bruises.
And we got to get, no bruises. But selfies are good.
Yes.
Right?
We need our Stuck Mike selfie. So continue to send those in with the hashtag. That's always fun to see.
Hashtag Stuck Mike selfie. And it's really fun to see all you folks out there having lots of fun. And by the way, thanks so much for all the comments, especially from some of the last interview shows and what we've been hearing back from you as far as the conversations we've been having on the show. We really appreciate that. And if you have questions, comments, etc., or you want your event announced here, just go to stuckmikeavcast@gmail.com. That's the email address. And tell us what you have coming up, what event you might be have in the near future. Anyway, well, Victoria, you sat down with a couple of people and talked about gyrocopters. And this conversation was really interesting. And it turned into a conversation about flying around the world in a gyrocopter. Why don't we go ahead and play that interview and then talk a little bit about gyrocopters and flying around the world. So let's go ahead to that interview.
All right, I just had a blast at the airport today with lots of friends. I've got a very excited friend with me and a very, very tired friend with me. First, I'm gonna introduce Frank, who's my buddy. You may have seen pictures of me with him on Instagram flying gyros, and that's what we're here to talk about today. So, hi, Frank.
Hello, Victoria.
Hello. Tell me a little bit about, let the listeners know about your experience in aviation and what got you into gyros.
Gyros is a recent part, only about 5 years ago in gyroplanes. I was a military pilot, and I'm currently a regional airline pilot. But I got back into GA about 10 years ago when I bought a powered parachute. And I realized I love the open air flying.
The fun toys.
The fun stuff. You know, yeah. For a while when you're a new pilot, all you think about performance, jets, technology. Someone introduced me to a powered parachute, and I'm like, whoa, put the brakes on. I want to go back to real flying.
Wind in your hair.
Love it.
Feel like a bird.
And I still love my powered parachute, but it has limitations with wind, which is why I got into gyroplanes. Somebody introduced me to a gyroplane, went on the first flight. It was gusty, but I didn't even feel it. And I realized, hey, I can have the same fun, but I don't have to do a whole setup procedure as I do in the powered parachute. I'm not limited to flying an hour before dusk and an hour after dawn. Mm-hmm. I can go all day long. I can go cross country, but have the same fun, the same thrill.
So would you ever consider flying around the world in a gyro?
Well, I've heard someone's done it or is doing it.
Yeah,
so
sounds familiar.
That sounds like something I'd like to try someday, but I wouldn't be the first one.
Yeah, so who's the first one?
Well, technically, is it Norman?
It's a very gray area. Norman's flown two separate flights.
Okay.
So I'll be the first official continuous circumnavigation, which is the first official FAI approved circumnavigation, if you like. I mean, Norman had flown two epic journeys, and we flew across Russia together. Sort of from a records perspective, and unfortunately, it's not a circumnavigation.
I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah.
We should introduce you, by the way.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Yeah, say your name, let everyone know where we can
My
find you.
My name is James Ketchell. I'm from a little place called Basingstoke, which is not far from London, and I'm currently flying around the world in a gyrocopter. I left England on March the 31st, flew the whole way across Russia, across the Bering Straits, down to San Diego, and here I am here, and I'm landing and taking off in every single American state, excluding Hawaii, and I've probably got about a month or perhaps 5 weeks left before I get home, so I've been on the go for a while now.
So you just landed here in Frederick, and I understand you're meeting a lot of great people along the way, like people are helping you out, places to stay, telling you where to go. What's that been like? I know the aviation community is really helpful.
Yeah, it's just been amazing. To be honest with you, I'll be playing forward favours for the rest of my life because so many people have been so good to me. And yeah, it's just incredible. It's difficult to... Because you're travelling every day, day in, day out, you don't really get to take it in. You're just doing it all. And I don't think it will sink in until I get home that, wow, I flew around the world and I met all these amazing people. And a lot of people ask me why I'm doing it. There's two missions. And the most important mission is to fly around the world and try and inspire a million young kids around the world mm-hmm. to pursue their own goals and dreams. And there's two charities that I'm raising money for back at home called Kindled Spirit and Over the Wall. And they look after kids, basically. So that's kind of like, if I'm honest, the main mission. But to date, no one has flown a gyrocopter around the world in one continuous journey awesome. And done it to the FAI actual standard mm-hmm. criteria, if you like. And a good friend of mine who I flew across Russia with kind of, I guess, technically had it. It's very difficult. It's a very grey area, you know. If you run 2 half marathons, yeah. do you get to say you've run a marathon?
Oh, no.
So I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah.
I would say no.
It's yes.
got to be continuous.
It kind of, but that. If I'm really honest with you, as soon as you put a record in the mix, it adds another layer of pressure.
Mm-hmm.
For me, if someone had already successfully flown around the world and got the record, and it would probably be less pressure. To mm-hmm. be really honest with you. Every time I land and take off, I have to have paperwork signed, and it's just not that easy. You know, mm-hmm. A lot of people are watching and expecting you to do this. There's pressure.
You got
to
be smiling the whole time.
Taking money off, a lot of money off sponsors and people to make the trip happen, and there's definitely quite a bit of pressure there. But in a weird way, I like it. It makes me come alive.
So tell me, just for a lot of our listeners that might just be used to fixed wing or maybe even rotor wing, I had this experience when I went down to Dulles where I helped Frank. We flew into Dulles Airport and I had to tell people about gyrocopters all day long.
Yeah.
And they fly more like planes even though they have rotors. Tell us a little bit about, you know, why you guys chose gyrocopters and why they're a little bit different than your normal aircraft.
Yeah, they are quite a bit different. They kind of fly like a fixed wing, but they have the characteristics of a helicopter. They're very versatile. You can slow them down and virtually go to almost zero airspeed, mm-hmm. and they'll just sort of descend, and you can do quite a lot with them. So they're just fun, and I tell you something, more and more people are starting to realize how cool they are mm-hmm. and actually how capable they are, because people still sometimes look at my aircraft and say, you wouldn't see me dead in that. And I would say to them, I'll tell you something, you want to be in this as opposed to that, because you're basically constantly flying with a parachute above your head. Because, you know, some people don't realize, they look at it and they think it's a helicopter and they say, well, it's not. You're just auto-rotating. So you're never, ever, ever going to just come crashing out of the sky.
That top rotor is actually not going to, due to an engine, it's due to the wind that's going through it.
So that's one good thing about them. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you, the huge advantage with a gyrocopter over a fixed wing is these little things, you don't get turbulence. They just go through gusty high winds and conditions that a fixed wing would almost be flipped over mm-hmm. in. You just go right through it in a gyro. These things are very, very good like that.
We followed it was a Cessna 120 back from Dulles, right, Frank? And it was gusting to... It was a windy day when we came back.
It was a windy day, and they were all over the place.
Yeah.
and we were just fine. We were by a mountain, and we didn't feel a thing.
Because we're open cockpit, our bodies could feel the turbulence, mm-hmm. but the platform...
Yeah. Just kind of like a pendulum under the water.
Correct. It is a pendulum. You're right. And they're basically the newer gyros now. They're just like self-stabilizing. So if you have any problems, just take your hands off the stick. You know, you're right. You're just dangling underneath it.
Look, Ma.
a fixed wing would be where it might be getting thrown all over the place. Do you know what a lot of people said to me before I came out to America? They said, don't fly in the afternoon. It's too thermal. You can't do it. You're going to get thrown all over the place. Gyrocopter?
Mm-hmm.
Nonsense. Right. I fly all through the day, every day, in the hottest weather out here, and I don't get thrown around at all.
That's comfortable.
But that might not be the case in a fixed wing. I don't know. But, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And you've flown in rain, so there's some, you have to think about weather a lot, maintenance along the way. I mean, a lot of planning went into this.
Yeah, I've been working on the project for over 3 years, trying to get all the funding together. That's the hardest part because, you know, people say to me, what do you do for a job? I want to do what you do.
And I'm like, well,
you probably don't because I spent a long time and I had a lot of disappointment trying to get to the start line. Mm-hmm. I just basically, if I'm really honest, I just didn't give up. Every time someone said no, I would speak to someone else. And if you do that enough, we have a famous saying back in the UK, and that is, if you throw enough shit at a wall, it sticks. So you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You just keep doing it, you're going to get somewhere in the end.
Yep.
And that's really all I did, and that enabled me to buy the aircraft and do this. The journey so far has, getting to the start line has been harder than what I've actually gone through flying around the world so far, if I'm honest with you.
Yeah, I'm sure, you know, a lot of ups and downs, and a lot of people don't have the almost endurance in their mentality to keep going. They might want to give up before they make it happen, even before they get in the cockpit.
You're absolutely right. You've got to want to do this a lot, otherwise you won't even get to the start line.
And you said you're running on adrenaline.
Yeah.
You're tired at night, but you're running on adrenaline.
Yeah, I am kind of running on adrenaline. You know, when you're flying, you're at a heightened state of readiness, you're concentrating, you do have adrenaline running through you. And then when you relax, like whenever I take a day off, there's a pattern, and I've noticed this over time. I take a day off and then I kind of relax a little bit, but not enough. And then the following day, I'm exhausted.
Yeah.
And what's happening is your body is just on a come down because you've been on a high.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, this project's very up and down. And what I've learned is if you keep moving, it seems to be the best thing.
Don't
stop.
We didn't let you sit too long at the restaurant because you were about to fall asleep in your burger. About the adrenaline, though, so what's next? I mean, once you fly a gyro around the world...
Well, I'm going to continue flying because I love flying very much. Whenever I fly, it's like all my worries and things that are on my mind, that play on my mind, like everyone
and
has stuff.
And you do fixed wing as well?
Yeah, I do a little bit of fixed wing
as well. But it's,
gyro.
It's more expensive over there, so the gyros are a little bit cheaper.
Fixed wing is expensive in the UK, much more so than here, I will continue doing some flying, but, you know... No one has circumnavigated the globe by air, sea, and land. I've already cycled around the world. I did that quite a few years ago now in 2013. And now I'm flying around the world. I only have 4 or 5 weeks left. It would be crazy not to sail around the world, wouldn't it?
I feel like you're 2/3 of the way there.
I kind of need to. I don't think I'd ever regret it.
I might be disappointed if you didn't.
Exactly. People would be more disappointed if I didn't have a go.
And so. Now it's like on record.
Yeah.
And we're going to have, 10,000 listeners downloading this, and they're going to hear. So we're going to check back with you.
Yeah.
We'll have to do like a follow-up when you're done and see what you're planning next.
But if anyone's interested, they can follow me on my website, which is jamesketchell.net. There's a tracker so people can see where I am, track me in real time over YouTube channel. So when I'm not too tired, I can edit together little videos and put them out and stuff. And I want to try and make the journey so it's interesting for other people following me. You know, because I'm the guy in the aircraft on my own, so I kind of get the kudos for that. But actually, it wouldn't really happen if it wasn't for all the people that are in the background supporting me and stuff. So the idea of the website and trying to make an effort to do postings on Instagram and YouTube is to bring other people in so they can share it too.
Exactly. And I followed your Instagram. It was kind of funny. I discovered you a couple weeks ago when our friend Kurt told me all about you. And he's like, you got to interview this guy. And I was like, he's going to listen to me. And then Frank messages me saying, guess who's coming?
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, go figure. So, first of all, let us know where we can find you, Instagram, YouTube, all that stuff so they know. And then if you want to make just any closing arguments about, you know, bringing this gyro community, getting more people out here learning that gyros are available.
You know, one of the things that I do want to do is to try and promote and highlight gyros. And the fact that these things are really cool, they're not silly little tin pot toys that are going to kill you. Gyros have really moved on a huge amount over the years. There's companies that have been making them for a long time. They're very safe, and there's great instructors over here who will teach you, will take you from zero to a good gyro pilot, and you can do a lot with them. I mean, I'm almost flown one around the world, so if I can do that, then you can certainly do some local flying.
And you had your fixed wing first, correct?
No, actually the opposite.
Oh, you did. You had gyro first?
And that was getting a fixed wing was easy
after that.
Yeah, easy peasy.
I was going to say, Frank is an instructor. Yeah. You told me it's pretty simple to get that gyro add-on, so I'm going to be training you with you on that next year. What do you have to do to get the gyro add-on when you're already a private pilot?
That makes everything very easy. To get the sport endorsement, there's no minimum hour requirement to fly. You just have to receive the instruction. You have to demonstrate a whole, it's not really a PTS anymore, but it's a whole gamut of maneuvers. Once your original instructor recommends you, you can go to a second gyro CFI and do all the same maneuvers and you get your license.
Excellent.
It's an endorsement. It's not a full check ride.
That's easy.
Yeah.
And what, 10, 15 hours?
The average, we like to say 10 to 15 hours for someone who's proficient currently.
Okay.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, tell us once more where we can find you, just so we don't forget and stalk you, because that app was really cool where we got to see when you were taken off from Martinsburg today. I was like, all right, time to head to the airport. He's on his way.
Yep. So my website is www.jamesketchell.net. And on there, you'll find my YouTube channel. It's right there. And my Instagram is Ketchell James. And my Twitter is Captain Ketch.
Ooh, Captain Ketch.
And that's about it. You'll find me there.
Oh, and I can be found, just remember, Gyro Mojo. That's my website, gyromojo.com, and also my Instagram handle.
And you got a YouTube.
That's under Frank Kenfly.
Yeah, there we go.
Yes.
Sweet.
I want Frank to open up a new Instagram that's called Frank Has Fun, because he gets all these new toys and I'm always getting one after him. We'll have to post, do a separate episode on this, but you have a very special couch.
Yeah, that is cool. Yeah.
I have my 1999 Sofa King. It's a couch that my cat pissed on, so it got relegated out of the house into the hangar, and I've sprayed so many chemicals on it, you can't smell the piss anymore. But put some wheels on it, found a handicapped chair on Craigslist, and now it's motorized, and we just kind of get around the airport with it.
So Frank welcomed James today via motorized couch and took him over to the airways to get some.
I still need
hamburgers.
To endorse James's
logo. Yeah, are you cleared to solo the couch?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thanks for listening, everyone, and be sure to check out my awesome friends on Instagram. I'll have links to both of their profiles on mine as well. And I definitely encourage you to take a look at gyros, and especially those gyros that are flying around the world, because this is definitely the next add-on I'm going to do, and I can tell you it's so much fun. It's real flying. It's wind in your hair. Sometimes rain in the hair,
rain
in your
face.
Rain in your face. Yeah. And definitely worthwhile. So be sure to check everyone out, and best of luck on the rest
Thank
of your trip.
You for having
That's going to be amazing. And hopefully we'll be touching base maybe in a year or so when you're sailing around
Absolutely.
The world.
Absolutely, 100%.
Wow, Victoria, that was really cool. I mean, now, boy, I want to go out and get my gyrocopter, the sport pilot endorsement, I guess it is in your logbook, and that is really, really awesome. You know, there's so many questions I have about this, Victoria, and I know you probably were, like, really inspired listening to them, and you said you're going to go forward with it. I'm curious, maybe, Victoria, you can answer this, you know, what are the costs involved there with purchasing, I guess, one of these? I don't even know. I mean, do you have any idea?
Yeah, so I actually insure quite a few gyrocopters, so it depends what the use is. They do, unfortunately, have higher insurance rates because the underwriters in the industry right now look at them to be kind of like rotorcraft. So you're going to get some rotorcraft premiums on these. But to purchase a brand new, if you were looking at the auto gyro, they have certified and experimental ones. You're looking anywhere from, you know, if it's used to new, anywhere from $50,000 up to over $100,000. But they're really cheap to operate. You can use auto fuel and they burn like 3 gallons per hour. It's something very, very low. So they're once you have it, and have it insured. They're cheap to operate, good to maintain, and they're a great way to get around. As you said, you know, Frank was looking at the powered parachute, but still wanted to have a little bit of travel, be able to travel a bit, and the gyrocopter allowed him to have that sport fun adventure feeling while still be able to go from one airport to another.
Oh, interesting. I wonder what the range is on those.
So James had an extra tank in his second seat, and he flew around the world in a Magni gyro. And with that second tank, I think he said he could go, and this is fully loaded, the aircraft, to, I think, 7 hours straight.
Well, that's a while. It's longer than my bladder will hang. And, you know, it's that actually, just the fact what he was talking, there's just so much here that I think is so cool. The fact that he talks about turbulence and the way that it handles turbulence, et cetera. I can see why, you know, one of my first bosses in the general aviation world, Richie Green up in New Jersey, he actually decided to build one himself, and he did a great job, and he will go out and fly that all the time. This is a guy who loves aviation, airline pilot, et cetera, but it really, he said, it got him back to actually feeling like a bird, and I think that's the really important part of it. You know, it's bugs in your teeth, wind in your hair, that type of flying. So, Victoria, did you get to go up quite a bit in that aircraft?
Yeah, I've been up a few times with Frank. So there's some that are closed cockpit too. So if you don't want the wind in the hair, you can still have the gyro experience. But I really prefer the open cockpit one. Frank has an auto gyro MTO Sport. So it's tandem seating, all open cockpit, wind in your hair. You do have a windshield, so the bugs don't always get you. And the turbulence part was kind of cool because we were flying. We went all the way to Dulles Airport. Dulles Airport lets us little airplanes in once a year for this big showcase at the Udvar-Hazy Museum. So we flew in a flight of two gyros into the SFRA and into Dulles. And on the way back, it was so windy and bumpy, but the gyro didn't feel it at all. And the only reason I knew it was windy was because it was open cockpit and I could feel myself being pushed by the wind. So my actual body was being affected by the wind, but the gyro wasn't at all. So if we were in a closed cockpit gyro, I probably wouldn't have even known it was windy outside. It was that smooth.
Yeah, really stable platform, it sounds like. Also, it was interesting what he said about the fact that, you know, if you say you lose your engine, you have a lot of options very close by to be able to get to. And the glide ratios are incredible. Maybe it's the auto rotation ratio was really good. Did he, you know, it's kind of curious. I wonder how far you can go as far as, like, if you're 1,000 feet in the air to be able to land. Sounds like you can get a lot of places, but you can also slow down quite a bit.
Yeah, I think you can get pretty far because actually when I flew with Frank a few times, he would do auto rotation right into landing. So you can drop the thing to idle and you can either fly a steep approach or a normal approach into the airport from really high. And what's unique about the gyros is there is no engine running that prop, that top prop rotor above you. You only have the back one is the one that's actually pushing you through the air. And you need just, as long as there's air flowing over those blades above you, they will keep moving.
And that's the term auto gyro. Yep. Or gyrocopter. Mm-hmm. It's something that's, I think we sometimes don't think about. But it does have a lot of utility, and at times we think about a lot of folks flying these out in the country and stuff like that, but there's a lot that fly out of towered fields, just like you guys were doing, right?
Yep, we fly out of towered fields. They have the radios. There's old versions of gyros and new versions of gyros. So the older ones back in the day only had two strokes engines. They were more, it almost looks like they were just made of wire, you know, there was not much to them. Now they've been really modernized and they have a good, safe place, even though it's open cockpit. You've got some substantial items around you and they have some really great Rotax 912, Rotax 915 engines in them. So they're reliable and safe aircraft.
Yeah, a very reliable engine. And, you know, the times I usually see them are really at Sun and Fun. I guess I'm going to start paying more attention. But, Tom, I'm wondering out where you are on the west coast there of Florida. Do you see many of these gyrocopters or auto gyros?
I've seen a couple of them flying up and down the beach. But, you know, I'm in the same boat as you. I've gone to Sun and Fun and to Oshkosh and looked at the Light Sport. And, you know, the gyrocopter guys are out there selling their wares. And I've stood there in front of them with other pilots, and you know, we do the same thing every time. We kind of tilt our heads off to the side and kind of look at that little seat and the blades up on top of it, and we ask ourselves the same question every time: would you get in that thing? And I'm like, I ain't getting in that, you know, because it looks like a bunch of little tubes with some spinny blades on top of it. And you know, I just didn't understand it until listening to this interview tonight, and now I'm intrigued. You know, the idea of being able to fly up and again get that feeling of you know, being up in the air with the wind in your hair. Well, for some of us,
wind on your scalp.
Wind on my scalp. Yeah, there you go. But that sounds awesome. You know, it's like I never really considered it. I know there was a whole sect of people that were flying these things, but you know, I thought it took somebody who was just a little off balance that didn't want, you know, that would jump into one of those. And
well, we never said like Frank and James weren't off balance.
That's fine. You know, so a question I have is, you know, what kind of altitudes do you do in one of those?
We like to stay low. I mean, it's kind of like when I flew a hot air balloon. You can go super high, but we're used to that view. It's kind of nice to stay low and slow and see what's going on down below. So I think we were only at 2,500 when we went to Dulles.
Oh, okay. So even that high, you know.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I was thinking more lower than that.
Yeah,
I
know there's lower.
Well, out of the airport I was operating out for a little while, there was a guy who was flying one of those air creation trikes. You know, it's like a hand glider with a fan on the back of it and some seats underneath it. Same thing. You know, I mean, he had about from where I was standing, it looked like about a 25-foot takeoff rolling up, and he was off. And he gives rides to people out over the beaches here. And, you know, I think he stays under 1,000 feet at all times.
Mm-hmm. And we have a guy here who flies one of the original gyros, but they don't have the most reliable engines, the ones that are installed in this, and he just stays in the pattern, and he has a blast.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong about staying in the pattern, but being low and slow, I think, is the best way to be in an aircraft, because that's what you want to do. You want to see everything down there, and again,
spoken like a true airline guy.
I know, exactly.
Doesn't get to see the ground too much.
Oh, it's so awesome seeing the ground, and that's what's so appealing to all those listeners that are out there that fly, you know, up in the stratosphere there. This is a cool way to see the homes and the churches and the lakes. And you know, I recently got back into flying small planes, and I tell you, being at 1,500 feet, 1,000 feet is just the coolest thing. And the freedom, you just feel just like a bird. And to have that and being able to reach out and touch the air, that would just be amazing to me. And that's what's so appealing to this, to the auto gyros. So, sure. You know, Tom, you and I should go out and get an auto gyro.
I'm all for it. Let's do it.
If you look at Frank's or James's Instagram, you can get that idea of Frank's pictures are all from around town and wherever he flies. And he'll like update us on construction in different areas. And the pictures are amazing. It's like you took a drone up there, but it's just taken from his little camera in the gyro. And the most recent picture James posted was of like this little iceberg off of Canada, just this ice sticking out of water. And it was clear and crisp. And he was just, you know, flying right over it, which you can't normally do in a lot of aircraft.
Sure.
I'm sold.
Me too. And you know, it's funny because like here in Florida, lots of people have swimming pools. They're all over the place. So, you know, when I fly and when I was teaching with students, you know, that's one of the little games we play is like, let's count and see how many green pools we see today. You know, looking because you can see in people's backyards and you start seeing how many green pools there are out there.
I see a business opportunity for you in getting the auto gyro and going around checking out the green pools and then selling that information to the pool service companies. What do you think?
Oh,
hey, you know, I'm just thinking outside the box here. And so it's one of those things that's, I think, is so cool about being that low is the fact that you actually do get to see things like the cars, the pools, and just things you would never see otherwise. And the fact that you can do it so slowly so you can take it in. When you're whisking around in your Mooney or your Cirrus, sometimes you don't kind of get that low and slow effect. And
in the gyro, you can turn around much quicker, too, your radius of your circle. So if you were circling around an object you wanted to take a picture of, it takes a lot less time than, you know, even your Cessna 172.
Oh, sure, sure. Well, gosh, Victoria, this has been awesome bringing that video, that interview to us, and I can't wait to hear more. We're going to have some links in the show notes to all that we talked about or that you talked about in that interview. And I think that really the one other thing that I think that we should mention is this person truly is inspiring people to reach out and go for their dreams and just, you know, don't set boundaries in your life. And this is someone who's definitely done that, circumnavigating the world.
Sounds like he loves to fly, lives to fly, and learns to fly.
Amen to that.
Who else does that?
Well, speaking of which, again, we're going to have all those links out there. But moving on to our other topic tonight, and loving to fly and living to fly, I finally, as some of you know, I finally dove in and decided to get an airplane. I'm leasing an airplane right now, and it's you know, a little Cherokee Warrior, and it's just absolutely a blast. I've been going up with students at the college here and just friends, and my nephew who's come back to live with us while he's going to college. It was, I tell you, one of the most exciting things was the other day. I took off, I'm here in Lakeland, and I went over to Tampa Exec, and just the smile on his face was worth getting the airplane. Just watching him be so excited about the fact that we had this freedom. All we did was took off and we landed at some other airport. And it made me realize, isn't that what we do when we do these intro flights? And it kind of brought me back, you know, 30 years to when I started saying, wow, that was cool. I just took off from Lakeland. I went over to Tampa and I'm watching all those people on the highway saying, I'm gonna buzz right by you and head over to Tampa. And being able to go somewhere and have lunch or visit and not have an agenda, it's just absolutely phenomenal. So that's been a real blessing. It really has. It's had its challenges. I'm into this whole ownership thing again. I know a lot of people know I had the 182 and I co-own that. Managing the whole aircraft, I've never actually done myself, and this is kind of a challenge for me. Scheduling the maintenance and that type of thing. One of the things I've noticed, I've gotten a little bit spoiled in the past. You know, I've said, hey, there's a maintenance problem, go fix it. Well, yeah, now it's me. I got to go get it fixed, you know. So just the things like knowing that the plane goes in, it's going to be down for a while. Now you don't have an airplane. And, you know, when you're renting a plane, you just get the next rental that's out there. But the really cool thing is it's yours and you can keep it nice and you want to keep it nice. But the other thing that's really, really cool, and Tom was actually visiting me today, is that I got a new hangar and a T-hangar over at Lakeland Airport. Brand new hangar. They just put them in. If folks you know, it's over at the City Tees, the City Hangar, City T-hangars. And it has been the coolest thing. And I'll tell you what's really cool, other than the fact it's neat to have a hangar on an airport, is there's this whole community that I had forgotten about. There's a community on the other side of the airport at the hangars where they're so friendly. And I'm sure that, you know, Victoria and Tom, you've probably experienced this a lot more than I have. It's almost like I'm rediscovering this world that's been in existence, but it's been over here and I haven't been able to reach out and grab it. And now I'm part of it. I can't tell you how many people have come up to me and welcomed me to the hangars. And a lot of guys like, hey, come over. We're going to have a barbecue and a few beers after we go flying, of course. I just think that's the neatest thing. I mean, Victoria, I'm you know, you're used to this, I guess, by now.
This is why I love aviation so much. And, you know, it's an expensive hobby to have, because that's right what it is right now, is a hobby. But I get so much out of the people that I meet and my friends. I have great friendships at the airport. So I can head up to the airport just to, like, maybe get something out of the hangar or drop something off to someone and run into people I know and, you know, just start up a conversation. And, you know, I know a friend this weekend, it's Labor Day weekend coming up here. She's going to be having a cookout at hers. You know, there's just such a sense of community. And since I've been working on my CFI, I have been hanging out, helping out another gal working on her CFI, doing ground together. And we'll find these other flight instructors stop by to help us out absolutely free, just to sit and chat and talk about aviation and ask us some challenging questions and help us out with things we're stuck on. And, you know, that's just something that happens out at those hangars just by someone walking by.
Gosh, that just sums it up so well, because I forgot about all that. Not only that, I think there's a lot of people out there that haven't experienced that private flying, that general aviation flying, and that community that's out there. And it's what's really cool is here I am, you know, a few thousand hours later, and I'm in just enjoying aviation again and getting so excited about it. And being able to take people up in an airplane and go flying. And I think the coolest thing, too, is like you take some young folks up, and I work with a lot of people that are just getting their ratings and need to build time. I was like, hey, this is, you know, you go fly. This is your time. And they are be able to put it in their logbooks, et cetera. And just the smiles on their faces when you do that is just, that's rewarding right there. And there's all these other things I remember doing, you know, with the Young Eagles and stuff. So this is, and I know the listeners are, some of you are listening to me like, where have you been? Well, gosh, you know, I've been flying some GA, but it's everybody else is doing the flying. Now I am. And it's good to be back. That's for sure. It really, really is good to be back. And I know, Tom, you and I, you know, have been able to go up and do some flying and all, and you were out at the hangar there. But one of the things that we had talked about today, and I kind of want to go over this a little bit, because I had forgotten, because I've been letting some of the younger folks from the college come in and use the hangar, is that there is kind of an etiquette in hangar usage. And having been in a hangar before, it all came back to me. But you know, you have neighbors, and when your door is open, they cover up your neighbor's door. So you, when you pull up to the hangar, you can kind of tell your neighbor, hey, how you doing? I'm just going in to get a few things. Don't worry about anything, because they might be saying to you, hey, do you need me to move my plane out now? When are you going to leave? That kind of thing. So one thing I've learned as far as hangar etiquette is that if you're going to take your plane out, let them know if they're sitting there, hey, I'm going to take the aircraft out. It's just going to take me a second to move it out. If you don't mind, I'm going to open the doors up. I'll put them right back and close them again. And a lot of times they'll say, hey, listen, I'm just working on my GPS. I'm just sitting here having a beer with the buddies. And I don't, you know, I don't need to move. So just you can leave it open as long as you want. Also, the other thing as far as etiquette is concerned is when you pull your airplane out, you're now blocking everybody else a lot of times. Normally at the T-hangers, it's not this really rush and this environment where there's a lot of activity like you see at a big flight school. It's usually just one or two people pulling the plane out and then they go. It's a lot slower pace. Amazingly enough, that's another thing that I observed that I had forgotten about. It's a relaxed atmosphere. So you just kind of pull the plane out and you say, hey, I'm going to go out this way, and you taxi out and you leave. You come back and you try to get out of people's way and then put the aircraft back in. So those are kind of the things I've observed with the hangar etiquette. Also, you know, things like playing really loud music or something like that. Not too many people do that, but every so often they do. And then, of course, when someone needs help, and that happened to me the other day, one of my neighbors has had a 210 and he needed help putting it in the hangar, you know, go out and help him out, push it in there. But Tom, you know, I know in Victoria, you probably have some advice as far as you know, some etiquette. You know, Tom, first of all, what do you think as far as advice to somebody who's now operating around a new hangar of their own? What type of things would you tell somebody as far as hangar etiquette is concerned?
I don't know. I've never owned my own hangar. And the thing is that, like, I started out, you know, in general aviation just at the flight school, you know. So I was on one side. I was at a flight school, and I moved to another airport and another flight school, and really wasn't exposed to, you know, the hangar's side of the airport until I already had my CFI. And it was because I had a student who had his own plane, and he said, yeah, just meet me over at this gate and we'll go out to the plane. And, you know, I was going to help him with a flight review and then start him on a next rating. And, you know, it was at that point that I got exposed to that. And it was a completely different world. You know, the last flight school that I worked at, we, had hangars. So, you know, we kind of had to learn some etiquette there too. And then when you're sending, you know, rental customers out to a hangar, you know, you kind of got to hope that they adhere to some type of etiquette, you know, and not, you know, disturb the normal flow from the regular tenants, you know, by having a rental plane in a hangar. So, you know, but pulling the plane out after you've pre-flighted it, you know, if that's possible. I mean, you know, pre-flighting a plane in a hangar, that's one of the greatest things about having a hangar is you got shade. I mean, us here in Florida, it's hot when you're out on a ramp trying to pre-flight, and being in the shade and being able to do it there before you even pull it out is a definite blessing. You know, pulling it out and then, you know, not pulling it out until you're actually ready to go. So, you know, just last checks and in the plane and start it up and get it out of the way. Because like you said, blocking the taxiway is not good etiquette, you know, and being observant of your neighbors, you know, what they're doing, how they're, you know, if somebody else is pre-flighting right next to you, like you just said, having that communication, you know, are you ready to go? Are you going out? Are you just starting it up for maintenance? Whatever, whatever the case may be. And then I totally agree with Victoria and the whole community aspect. You know, I've definitely got to experience that as well. And, you know, have had some nice offers to go to different events at different hangars and met lots of other pilots and, you know, just talk the talk and walk the walk and had a good time with it. So it's definitely its own little community within a already small community of aviation.
Victoria, how about you? I mean, what advice? Do you have any tips for etiquette in the hangar world?
We have a few rules at our hangar just because it pertains mostly to the aircraft, but also to be, you know, polite to things around you is, you know, first off, our airplane is owned by the company and it's just a benefit that we get to use it, all the employees at our company, and always leave it the way you found it, you know. So every time we fly it, we fill it back up and we clean off the struts and the windshield. So, you know, you leave a clean plane for the next person. We keep good records of who flew it and where and the times and if we put gas or oil in it and all that fun stuff, which a binder that never leaves the aircraft. So there's always items like that. You know, always try to put the airplane as centered as possible. So when someone else takes it out, they might not, you know, bang it into one of the cars that are also parked in the hangar. And, you know, one thing I thought of is prop wash. There, people hang out at their hangars all the time. And I know I love to see, you know, people pull up and then like to spin the plane around so that you can easily just back it back into the hangar. But if there's other hangars open, even yours, that prop wash is sending dirt, leaves, who knows what, maybe someone's, you know, flight planning and has a sectional chart out on a table in their hangar. You're blowing all that and all those people. So, you know, I make sure unless all the hangars down the row are closed that I just pull straight ahead and stop the plane and then I will back it up and turn it around with the tow bar to push it back in.
You know, that's a great point. I forgot about that one. And I always stress that one. Hey, you know, just pull up parallel, maybe a little bit to, you know, away from the hangar so a little bit easier to put it in, but make sure you shut it down and don't blow away the person behind you. Always know what's behind you. And I definitely do that. I look behind me before I start the engine. And in general, I do that, but even more so at the hangar. Say, hey, listen, I'm not going to blow over anybody. So great points. That's for sure. You know, you said something there about pulling the airplane out. One of the terms we use and happens to, I don't know, just about everybody at some point in their career, they get what's called hangar rash. And that means, you know, accidentally touching the side of the hangar or items that are in there like a car. And one of the things that, you know, in the past, having been in so many hangars, we talked about avoiding hangar rash. And there was one important point that was drilled in my head when I first started doing this. And, you know, I think is really important is that when you're putting your aircraft away, pulling it out it seems to be a little bit easier usually, but especially putting it away into this area you go from a large area that's wide open outdoors into this smaller area inside your hangar, you have a tendency to possibly bump into things. And I've always told people to stay right in the middle and just have markings that show you where you need to stop so you don't crash either your wings if you're in a T-hanger or your tail, that type of thing. So a couple things I think that help with avoiding any type of damage or what we call hangar rash are keeping it centered, but also having some other tools possibly for you, markings on the ground, etc. I know, Tom, you and I today were looking at another thing, which my last partner in the airplane did, and I thought this was brilliant, is having, you know, because usually the doors, by the way, are on these rails that you have to get over, using, and the wheels have to get over in the airplane. That can be kind of difficult to do. So some people have built these little ramps. And Tom, tell us a little bit about what I think you came up with, and I'm sure there's a lot of other folks have done the same, to make it easier to get into the hangar.
Well, what I did is I found they make them commercially. I believe you can find these ramps that actually go over there, and I think they're a high-grade plastic. I looked into them. I think they were kind of expensive, and, you know, when I looked at them for the hangar that I was using a lot at one point and trying to push a 2,500-pound Cirrus back into with a little bit of an uphill grade. And, man, that plane was just so hard to push in there, especially late in the afternoon when it was hot. So I thought, well, I want to see if I can design something that'll go into the track. So I did. I figured out how to make it out of wood and some materials that I got from a previous career that I was in. And it was something that worked out real well. So, you know, yeah, when we were talking today, I think I'm going to make one for your hangar. So it'll make it a little easier to push that plane in and avoid a little hangar rash.
So what do I owe you for that, Tom? Or should we not negotiate in front of everybody?
Probably not in front of everybody.
$1 million.
We want to do this one behind closed doors. And no photography.
No photography.
No photography.
Speaking of photography, I am definitely going to run out and get one of those cameras, an action camera, like a GoPro. I've tried some other ones. That is definitely on the list. Another reason I'm bringing my nephew along, and I want to start answering questions from the airplane and from the cockpit, but obviously I can't be flying and doing that at the same time. So look for some of those videos once I figure out what camera I'm going to get. I just got to figure that one out next. And that's the other thing, by the way. There's an endless supply of things that you seem like you need to buy for an airplane, or maybe not need, want to, I guess is a better way to say it. But you could go hog wild, that's for sure. You know, you start looking at catalogs, you start saying, oh, I wish I had this for the airplane. So it, and I know some of you listening or have aircraft are like saying, yeah, man, it's you could spend tons of money. I spent $100,000 in my mind within the first week. I mean, it's amazing what you can do to your hangar and to also your airplane. Which brings me to another point. I'd love to hear some people's opinions on this. Write us at stuckmikeavcast@gmail.com, or, you know, you can actually go out and, you know, use our Instagram account, whatever you want to do, and Twitter. Send us a message. I'd love to know what you think are the three most important things I need to get for my hangar. And I know my buddies have said this one thing already, and that's a refrigerator, a small refrigerator to store cold water and other beverages inside so they can come visit. But I'd love to hear from you, you know, what are some of the most important things I need to get in my hangar? And Tom, since you've been there, what's one of the things I need to get right away?
Oh, I would go right with that refrigerator. Cold water is a must.
Yeah, I have a lot of water in the hangar, but not cold.
I think, well, so Carl already has an air conditioner in his hangar.
Oh, that's right,
so
I forgot to mention that.
Yeah, you already got an air conditioner, so that's, I'm thinking that refrigerator is going to be a top priority.
People are probably thinking, really, you're so spoiled, Carl. This and is then, just
and then
a
maybe we can
one.
Get Victoria to get that guy to send us the planes for the motorized couch.
We could
use one of those, too.
Well, that's awesome. I tell you, I definitely want to see that, the motorized couch. That's kind of cool. But, yeah, so I'd love to hear what other people think. Victoria, what do you think is my next thing that I need to get for the hangar?
Well, I was going to say couch. You know, the people that I go to visit and have cookouts and stuff, there's always somewhere to sit, something to drink, often something to eat. And that's what we do. We sit around and we chat. And most of these people have high wing planes, and it is a T hanger. So under one wing, there's usually some seating and like a coffee table. A friend of mine actually has old airline chairs are the seating that they use, which is kind of neat. It just makes it fun. Or a projector. We've had movie night out at people's hangars and just had a screen and a projector and sat out there watching a movie after a day of flying.
Awesome. Victoria, that was awesome right there. I'm going to do that. You know, bring in some of the friends. And I already have the projector. I just need the screen. So that'll definitely be the next thing to do, is get that out there so I can say hi to people and invite them out to the hangar. That'll be a lot of fun. You know, the other thing, Victoria, about the hangar, which you know a lot about, is I feel that, and you're in the insurance business, I feel it's much better to have the airplane in a hangar, and I think the insurance rates go down, and I know that I'm preparing, you know, we're going to have a hurricane come through here. One of the best ways to prepare, I'm not going to move my plane. I'm going to leave it in the hangar. I'm going to put some chocks under all the wheels to make sure it doesn't move if it's going to move. I don't know. But what do you think? I mean, have you, from the rates and the actuaries must know, is it better to have it in a hangar? I'm assuming yes.
Well, premium-wise, there are discounts for it. So think of all the things that can happen while it's not flying on the ground. Hailstorm, that can ding it up. Another plane breaks free of its tie downs and hits your plane. So there's definitely a lot of things, or just someone taxiing by, or, you know, big storm, a tree goes flying by. There's lots of things that can happen when your aircraft's tied down, that, you know, just having four walls around you adds a lot of safety factor. It does decrease your premium, depending on the carrier, you'll get a little discount, built in there for having it hangared. And, you know, speaking of the hurricane coming through, we had a client a few years ago who was right in the path of the hurricane and wasn't able to move their plane to another airport or get it put in a hangar, and it was totaled during the hurricane. So that's something that definitely you would need to think about out there in Florida. Of course, we all can't afford hangars, or all, you know, like my airport, you're on a long, long waiting list to get one. So you do what you can to make sure your aircraft is safe, especially when a hurricane's coming by.
Well, I tell you, though, it's definitely worth it having the hangar. Just like you said, from the damage standpoint, also another thing, your plane doesn't get wet. It doesn't get as dirty. There's a little more dust on it, that kind of thing. But, yeah, that's really, you know, kind of an important point, is it's going to be protected from all the wind damage, et cetera. And I know last year we had, no, 2 years ago, we had a hurricane come through, and I hit right here. This one might actually hit us also. And there was a big difference between folks that had aircraft in hangars and those that had them outside. Most of the people moved them, though. And that's important, you know, getting ready for the big storm coming through that we have, that's moving through here probably in the next few days. So that's something that I think, too, even if you have a hangar, I would think the best thing to do is to make sure there isn't, you know, things that can't fly around, in case those. I've seen in past storms where the actual doors may not, you know, break down, but they come off the tracks a little and let some air in. So things can fly around inside your hangar. So that's another thing I'm going to do. Actually, tomorrow I'm going to prepare for this storm, and hopefully things will go well. Anyway, this has been really exciting. Like I said, please let me know what you think as far as the three most important things I need to get for my hangar. I'm going to put it on a list. I think the refrigerator was the big one on the list. The projector, I'm definitely going to get that and also the screen, but I'd love to hear what your ideas are and the three things, most important things for the hangar. Also, coming up on either the next episode or the one after that, we're going to talk about smoke in the cockpit. I had an episode with smoke in the cockpit. It's happened to me about three times in the past, you know, 30 years. It was pretty exciting, and obviously we lived through it, but there's a couple things that I learned from reviewing this, and we always learn from all these instances, so I want to kind of walk you through what happened with my smoke in the cockpit, and we're going to talk a little bit about what you can do to prepare, and what I'm doing actually to better prepare for this happening possibly again in the future. So stay tuned for that one.
Our picks of the week.
But anyway, let's move on to the next part in the after landing checklist, our picks of the week. I'm going to start with my pick of the week. And I am, you know, there's one person out there that is really somebody that I think is passionate about sport and light aviation, and that's Dan Johnson. He has this incredible website, bydanjohnson.com. And he talks about gyroplanes. He did this really cool video and talks about gyrocopters and some great news for gyroplanes as far as sales, etc. And I have a link on the website, bydanjohnson.com, a link to that and that article and that video. But most importantly, if you're looking at getting into this, this is a great resource. By Dan Johnson has videos on, I mean, he has the largest, I think, repository of videos on light sport aircraft and affordable aircraft. So big hats off to what he does there. But I definitely highly recommend you going out there and checking it out. So that's mine, bydanjohnson.com. So, Victoria, what is your pick of the week?
Well, it's continuing with the theme, since James Ketchell was an awesome dude doing great things for charities. And just, man, this guy has energy. He does all kinds of neat things around the world. So I wanted to just give props to his first book was about climbing Everest, rowing across the Atlantic, and cycling around the world. So something to get you excited about, to read about all these awesome things while we sit and wait for maybe his second book about gyrocoptering around the world.
Cool. Can't wait to see that one come out. But he is truly the adventurer. I think he's awesome and just an inspirational person. So go check that out in the show notes, jamesketchell.net. And he talks about the Ultimate Triathlon book. Tom, what is your pick of the week?
Yeah, so you mentioned, you know, as we're recording this, we are watching Hurricane Dorian, which is out in the Atlantic. It's headed towards Florida at the moment, and we'll see what happens over the next few days. But it got me to thinking of those guys over there in Lakeland that work for NOAA and fly Miss Piggy and Kermit. And specifically, those planes are WP3 Orion. So the P3 Orion was originally made to be a submarine hunter. And one of the cool facts about that thing is that the prototype of it was built from a Lockheed Electra. So they took the Lockheed Electra and then they put four engines on it and they started moving towards this hurricane hunter or a submarine hunter. And that was the P3 Orion. Well, when NOAA needed a plane, they figured out how sturdy these things were, and they were the perfect fit, and they fly these things right into the eye of the hurricane. So, you know, as I'll post a link here for the plane, Kermit and Miss Piggy, and you can read up on that. But if you're interested, go deeper and just find out more about the P3 Orion. It's an awesome aircraft, and you know, and what they use it for and how they've outfitted it for hurricane hunting is just remarkable. So, like I said, I was thinking of hurricane today, and I thought it'd be a nice little pick of the week.
That's awesome, man. I tell you, I've got a bunch of photographs. I just recently took a tour of that since it's on the south side of the field. Really impressive aircraft, and I'll probably put that up on our Instagram or have Victoria help me out with that one so I can actually share with you some of the innards of it. And it really is a cool-looking aircraft, but check out the website and also the link there. Really, really awesome what they do, and they really do some really important work keeping us safe by being able to track it and tell us exactly where it is. So anyway, thanks for that pick of the week. I appreciate it. And guys, you know, this has been terrific talking about gyrocopters. And one of the things I think is important, that if you're thinking about doing something, you know, as far as flying is concerned, you know, maybe do what I did. Finally, take the bull by the horns and go out there and get yourself an airplane, get a hangar, or go out there and get a gyrocopter rating. But really try to get out there and do something in aviation. Have some fun. Enjoy it. Go out and learn something new. You know, get into that whole lifestyle of aviation. But, you know, the one thing that's really important is that we all love aviation, and it manifests itself in many ways. Whatever it is you can do, whatever you can afford, get out there and do it. Just don't, you know, listen to us. Go out and enjoy that world of general aviation. And hopefully I'll be getting some videos out there after I figure out which camera I'm going to get. And next time I'll maybe be talking to you from that airplane. All the links to this in this podcast that we talked about are going to be at the bottom of the show notes. So make sure you check those out. Check out James Ketchell and his actually ventures around the world and his newest one in a gyrocopter. Well, folks, we really appreciate your listening today. Safe flying. We'll talk to you next episode.
You've been listening to the Stuck Mike Abcast. Members of the Stuck Mike Abcast may receive compensation for products or services mentioned during the podcast. Compensation may be received in the form of, but not limited to, referral commissions, free products or service trials. Our opinions and views are never influenced by any compensation, and you should always perform your own due diligence before purchasing any products or services mentioned during the show. The Stuck Mike Abcast is an aviation podcast and a Valeri Aviation Corporation production.